Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Mark Rodenberg, who is the President and Executive Director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, EPIC, in Washington, D.C. He teaches information privacy law at Georgetown University Law Center and frequently testifies before Congress on emerging privacy and civil liberties issues. He has served on several national and international advisory panels, including the Expert Panel on Cryptography Policy and Computer Security for the OECD and the Legal Experts on Cyberspace Law for UNESCO, and he chairs the ABA Committee on Privacy and Information Protection. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mark Rodenberg.
Nice to be with you.
And Mark, what do you make of this attempt on the part of the Jeff Sessions Department of Justice to demand that the internet hosting service DreamHost turn over the identities of effectively what DreamHost is saying, the identities of political dissidents of the current administration? Specifically, they want about 1.3 million IP logs from DreamHost of those that had visited an anti-Trump website who apparently had something to do with organizing some protests, particularly in and around the inauguration.
Well, it's a very concerning development. What the Department of Justice is trying to do is uncover the identity of people who engaged in political protest by going to an internet company which would have perhaps records of some of their online identities related to the IP address, which of course is the internet protocol address. We find it chilling at multiple levels. First of all, the First Amendment is the cornerstone of political freedom in the United States. And the premise of the First Amendment, of course, is that people do have the right to engage in political activity without repercussion or government investigation. So even before we get to the internet issue, I think we have to understand that for the Department of Justice to go after political protesters is clearly a problem. And of course, we'll talk as well about the particular technique and how they're trying to identify people by means of the IP address.
But your organization, the Electronic Privacy Information Center, EPIC, has filed an amicus brief in the Supreme Court urging the Supreme Court to safeguard the First Amendment right to read in the digital era. Is that to say that the law has not caught up with technology?
Well, I think as a general matter, that's correct. In fact, EPIC, you know, my organization has filed many briefs before the Supreme Court over several years around Fourth Amendment search issues, and oftentimes in these cases, which increasingly involve cell phone service and internet service, we point out that when the government seeks to exercise a search, which is traditionally thought of as a Fourth Amendment activity, there are oftentimes also First Amendment implications, because when they search for information about individuals engaging in political activity, that's what triggers the First Amendment interest. We did very recently, this past week, file a brief in the Supreme Court in a case called Carpenter versus the United States. And that case poses a fundamental question, which is whether our Fourth Amendment protections for the contents of the communications of our calls will also protect the records associated with our calls. And you see in this particular case, now in the D.C. Superior Court, one of the key questions is whether there are constitutional protections that limit the ability of the government to get access to the details of the calls, even though that may not be the content of the communication.
So specifically, there was a site, I believe it was called, the website was disruptj20.org, and it served as a clearinghouse for activists who were mobilizing resistance to President Trump's inauguration on January the 30th, and as we saw on television, there were street demonstrations, etc. And you can't help noticing, Mark Rodenberg, that the very people that Donald Trump made an attack on yesterday in this impromptu press conference in Trump Tower, where he again equated the Nazis and white supremacists with the other side. In this case, Trump even went further to refer to them as the alt-left. So is there a possibility here that because Trump has this obviously unshakable belief that there is equal blame on all sides, as he said, that he's somehow trying to prove that these people are just as bad as the Nazis, and he's directed Sessions to do this. I mean, it...
Well, let me begin by saying that it would be a separate concern and a grave concern if the investigations undertaken by the Attorney General were directed by the White House. That simply is not supposed to take place in our country. The Attorney General operates pursuant to legal authorities, prosecutorial priorities. There are a number of rules regarding the circumstances under which investigations are to be pursued or not to be pursued. But one of the fundamental rules about the use of the Department of Justice's enormous resources to undertake and pursue prosecution is that they may not be directed by the White House. In fact, communications between the Attorney General and the White House are almost inherently suspect. This is one of the issues that is, you know, of course, returned to the Attorney General, Mr. Sessions, and growing concerns about what may have been said earlier between the President and him. But I need to underscore this point because it would go to the professional responsibility and the obligations not only of the Attorney General, but the people who are working in the Department of Justice. They could not undertake an investigation pursuant to the direction of the President.
So it's just a coincidence that Jeff Sessions, DOJ, is looking for the identities of the very same people that Donald Trump is blaming equally for the outrages that took place in Charlottesville over the weekend.
Well, that, of course, is a clever statement, and I'm not prepared to say that it's a coincidence either. Mm-hmm. It may be, in fact, a situation that the Attorney General has, you know, taken a lead from the President and believes that he therefore has to undertake this investigation. But as I said, this would actually go to the professional conduct of the Attorney General if he were to pursue his prosecutorial activities on that basis. And it would be a problem, you know, quite severe, but also separate from the decision of the Department of Justice to pursue information leaking, linking to those engaged in political protest.
So let's, Mark, just talk about where this situation stands now with DreamHost refusing to comply with the government's warrant, demanding that they turn over these 1.3 million IP logs to find out who these protesters are and or were going back to the inauguration. DreamHost has argued that the prosecutors are attempting to, quote, to identify the political dissidents of the current administration. Where does it stand in terms, because I think that already a judge has a judge already ruled against DreamHost?
No. Well, the judge in the D.C. Superior Court agreed to issue the subpoena when the Department of Justice approached the judge with jurisdiction over the company. The judge said, okay, I see adequate legal authority to grant the subpoena. It actually surprised, I think, a number of legal experts that he made that decision. As I said, it's a very unusual circumstance to make this type of request in these circumstances. And I think the view of the legal experts is that the judge likely should have denied the request from the Department of Justice. So what happened next is that the internet company DreamHost receives a subpoena, which is essentially a legal order, instructing the company to turn over the IP records that would make it possible to identify internet users. And DreamHost says no. They said that they will oppose the order. And another judge has agreed, actually I believe the chief judge of the D.C. Superior Court has agreed to hold a hearing, which was originally scheduled for this Friday. I believe it's been postponed to next week. And now we have a very interesting situation because many of the civil liberties and privacy groups and internet companies are siding with DreamHost, and they're saying that the company was correct to oppose the subpoena. And, of course, they're also concerned, you see, because this could be a precedent-setting case. The Department of Justice has the ability here to get access to the names of people engaged in political protests, and they could go to many other internet companies with similar authority and make similar requests. So I think the stakes are high. I think it's right that people are concerned about this. I think the Department of Justice has exceeded its authority, and engagement activities that clearly implicate First Amendment interests. Our view here at EPIC is that the very best way to protect privacy, of course, is not to retain the personal information about Internet users, because in keeping this information, the web logs and the IP addresses, DreamHost has created a target for the government prosecutors to get access. And if the information were not retained, essentially if it were ephemeral, then the ability of the government to get access to this data would be significantly diminished. So we certainly credit the company for opposing the subpoena. The Department of Justice was wrong to seek this information, but at the same time, we would also encourage Internet companies such as DreamHost to seriously consider the extent to which they can minimize the data about their customers that they choose to keep.
But how would this relate to these cloud services? I mean, I thought that was the whole point of these Internet web hosting, that they did retain data.
Well, I think we need to distinguish, of course, between the content and the files that people may store in the cloud and access in the cloud, and the transactions associated with the particular access by an Internet user to a file or a record. And it's those transactional records you see that the government is trying to obtain. That's the information about, certain users who are going to certain websites. And we think the better practice is that that data not be retained.
So, but EPIC has already gone down this path before, haven't you? In 2006, you opposed a similar government demand, which they later dropped, for a week's worth of search queries into Google. So this is not unique in the sense that this is the Trump administration, DOJ.
No, this is not. That's correct. And I believe we have an item at our website, which is epic.org, where we provide a bit of that history. And I remember this. I mean, this was, more than 10 years ago. This was President Bush's Department of Justice, and this was actually the early days of Internet search. And they were trying to enforce, I think, an anti-abortion statute, and they wanted to try to determine who may be getting access to websites that raise some suspicion. They made an extraordinary request to Google at that time. They requested 2 months of search history for all of their users. They said, in effect, give us all of this information, and we will decide, what of this information is useful for our investigation. And Google rightly opposed it, and we joined with them and others and spoke out against the Department of Justice's excessive attempts to gather user data from an Internet company. I'll say 10 years ago, actually, Google was quite a small company. Of course, today it dominates the Internet. But back in those days, we said this is wrong, and the Department of Justice eventually backed off that request, which was the correct thing to do. I know there are a lot of groups across the country that are writing to the Attorney General, Mr. Sessions, and urging him to seriously consider dropping this request. It's a very unusual request, as I said, in the United States, to try to uncover the identity of people expressing their political views through protest. We don't typically do this.
Well, it gets to the notion, doesn't it, of any citizen who visits a website could come back to haunt you. I mean, I know, for example, the Russian intelligence service, the FSB, they frame people by putting, child porn and stuff on their websites to then accuse them to get to, that's what they do with political dissidents. So the idea that the government can search around and find out what websites you visited is just chilling in itself, isn't it?
Well, I agree, of course. It is chilling. And I don't think that people should take the view that therefore they need to be more cautious about the websites they visit or what they say on the Internet. We've been at these issues for a long time. I remember the case back in the 1990s against the Department of Justice. And by the way, it was the Clinton Justice Department in those days. So both parties, of course, can engage in excess, and they tried to limit the type of information that was available on the Internet, and we opposed that. It was an important victory actually a decision of the Supreme Court in 1997 that protected the First Amendment on the Internet. So our view is that people should have the freedom to express their views. They should be held accountable for their acts. I'm not suggesting that the Department of Justice doesn't have the authority to investigate criminal conduct, but there's nothing that I've seen so far about this case that suggests actual criminal conduct. I think this is largely a case about, you know, individuals and organizations who have expressed opposition to the Internet, and the Attorney General is trying to uncover their identities. And this is not right. something that should be permitted.
Well, Mark Rotenberg, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Nice speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Mark Rotenberg, the President and Executive Director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, EPIC, in Washington, D.C. He teaches information privacy law at Georgetown University Law Center and frequently testifies before Congress on emerging privacy and civil liberties issues. He has served on several national and international advisory panels, including expert panel on cryptography policy and computer security at the OECD and legal experts on cybersecurity at UNESCO. And he chairs the ABA Committee on Privacy and Information Protection. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.